Welcome back to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper, recovering from a hearty and fantastic holiday week. I hope you did the same. We haven't talked to you since Friday. I've got Matt Moore on a cellular line, calling in from the great state of either Nebraska or Wyoming, maybe Colorado by now, depending on where you are. Matt, how's it going?
Good. I'm back home in Colorado. I'm going to retrieve my wife from Western Nebraska later this afternoon. Had a great holiday. What was the best thing you got for Christmas?
My parents, I didn't get to spend Christmas with my parents last year. We ended up seeing them a week later. So they came to visit us for the week, and that was a great present. And then I got this really awesome pocket watch. So now I've got, in the last like couple weeks, I've gotten a monocle and a pocket watch. I am a cane and a top hat away from being fancy.
We've got to make this happen. We have to make this happen. And then, I have a fedora, which looks ridiculous on me. Like, it keeps my head warm. Like, my parents, my in-law got me this, like, really great fedora. Because it's so warm. And we've had discussions about this, about how important that is for me, especially in cold weather.
Right.
So when you show up to All-Star, and like, I can have the fedora, and you can have the top hat, and,
it will be the fanciest 1920s bloggers in the world. How was your Christmas?
It was great. It was really good. I got to see both sets of parents, which is important when you have a kid. The downside is have you seen the movie Real Genius?
Yes.
So, you know how the popcorn spilled out of the house at the end?
Sure.
That's my house only with toys.
Okay.
it's just unbelievable. It's just the first grandchild. It's just unbelievable the amount of stuff that's bought. And you have to, and all of it makes noise, Harper. All of it makes noise.
Well, it has to make noise, because otherwise he would be able to sleep.
All of it makes noise, but the socks make noise. I don't know how this is possible. It was good. It was really good. It was a really good Christmas, and we had some good stuff up on the Christmas Day games during the day, and we'll talk a little bit about those in a little bit. But
you know who got a great Christmas gift?
Who got a great Christmas?
Avery Johnson. He's getting free money now. That was his Christmas gift. Fired. Gone from the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, as long as the Nets aren't making rash decisions, as long as Philip Robinson isn't leaping to conclusions early on.
I think that. It's hilarious. It's weird. It's weird laughing about someone losing their job, and clearly his son, Avery Johnson's son, is not taking it well on Twitter. Like, he's kind of going on a little rampage as we speak. But the fact that he lost his job less than a month after he won Coach of the Month is just, it's so funny to me.
That's the NBA. But that's the NBA. I have to say real quick, I am happy with them for one thing, though, which is the worst thing. If these coaches fire, like, coaches get fired, and they accept that. Like, if you talk to them, they don't think it's great because nobody likes it, but they'll all be like, it's just how it is.
Yeah.
They kind of accept it. They don't rail against it. 5 years ago, the Bulls fired Skiles on Christmas.
Yeah.
And, like, that was just brutal. I mean, honestly, firing a guy on Christmas, so I'm at least glad that they waited until after. You know, for me, I'm just concerned because this is Darren's second coach that he's gone through in, like, 3 years.
Yeah.
We talked about Dwight Howard. Dwight's doing better because he actually got his fired as opposed to Jerry Sloan, who left on his own accord. And Dwight did in a tighter time frame, but this is still a really strong move by Darren Williams to essentially re-sign, saying, I believe in what Avery Johnson has told me, and then maneuver to get his coach fired.
It's, we always, over the last couple of years, it's been this, can Kobe get to Jordan in terms of rings won? Can he get to six? Can he pass six? Is that going to happen? Dwight should have the inside track on getting a third coach fired before Darren can, but you just don't know. I mean, maybe, Mike D'Antoni might turn this thing around a little bit with Steve Nash. Aside from last night, they're playing better since Nash returned, and that could give D'Antoni some real job security. So depending on who Brooklyn hires, Darren might have an incredible advantage to getting the next coach fired.
PJ Colosimo's taking over. That's not a good sign.
He's never had problems though with players. So that'll be okay.
Never if he's a star player.
Who do they go to? I mean, obviously the rumors start flying with, would Phil Jackson want to coach there? Would Stan Van Gundy want to coach there? I mean, it's the same names that popped up for the Lakers. I suggested Kurt Rambis and Jerry Sloan just for the lulls. But, I mean, what is a realistic – do they hire another coach this season or do they just roll with Carlissimo?
I'll say they probably do wind up hiring somebody else because this is kind of what they do, right? Like, this is a rash decision in and of itself, and they've shown absolutely zero willingness to be patient. So you have to assume that they're going to go ahead and can. If they get the next guy, they'll go ahead and get him.
Couldn't they just bring in Bernie Bickerstaff until the next coach is hired? Couldn't he just be like the wolf from Pulp Fiction?
That'd be great. That's a great idea.
Yeah, just have him in a tuxedo on the sidelines, giving orders in a very calm and frank way, just until things get right, until they clean up.
And you really want to scrub that pick and roll, and you all will get the brain out of it.
Right. I think he could offer to buy Prokhorov some very nice linens.
I was thinking about this morning after I was pondering it after the news came out. It's a return to New York, but he also gets to screw over the Knicks for not going after him when he would have taken the job. The biggest thing, I tend to lean towards no because he's so picky about wanting a championship caliber squad.
Right.
Like, that's the smartest thing Phil Jackson never did. Don't talk about bringing in the triangle. Don't talk about the nasty stuff. No. He very, very smartly, since the Bulls, has selected... And yes, he's going to do it with the Lakers, but he basically was like, can they win a title? Oh, yeah, they could definitely win a title. Yes, I will coach the team.
Right.
He's not taking on the Bobcats, but he's not out there being like, I really want to coach a young, up-and-coming team or a team with good but not great stars and try and coach them up. No. He's like, do they have the best talent in the league? Yes, I will coach them.
Yeah, he doesn't flirt with this idea of like a Disney movie of, I could get this young upstart team and we could pull it together and really, really get the championship and win everybody over. He's like, nope, give me the best. Like, I'm not going to waste my time here.
Yeah. And, I don't think you look at, it's like, wow, Gerald Wallace could do his Pippen. Yeah, that's a pretty big step down for Scottie Pippen to Gerald Wallace. And I like Gerald Wallace a lot.
Yeah.
Darren is definitely no anything right now, really. Darren's no Kyrie Irving right now. So Darren's no CJ Miles right now.
Keith Bogans could be the Scott Burrell or maybe the Judd Bushler.
Lopez is like mega Luke Longley.
Yeah.
He's like super Longley.
Teletovic could be like Jack Haley to Andre Blatches or Reggie Evans, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
I think this is doable.
Good. So if he wants like the D level, the complete knockoff role, this is a great pitch for him. I like the idea of Sandman taking it, just even though this, like, Van Gundy and Dwight have both gone out of their way, they had no animosity towards each other. I just like the idea of Van Gundy taking the Nets job, specifically to be like, oh, you want to go to Brooklyn now? Do you want to go to Brooklyn now? Huh?
I think it'll be pretty obvious if he's really trying to mess with Dwight if he takes the job for $1. Like, we want to negotiate a contract. No, I'm good. I just want to coach your team.
I just want one Diet Pepsi a day.
Yeah.
The thing is, Phil's a candidate. Here's the big thing is, you gotta get Darren on board. And here's the really crazy part. What's gonna happen is, when factoring that, everyone's gonna throw out names that would make sense for a logical human being. And you can't do that with players. When players have, this is why I always say, like, you cannot give players as much power.
You kind of have to, though, don't you?
You give players as much power, and now, Darren may be like, what should I think? Oh, I really want Paul Westphal. Something just absolutely insane.
Do you think Reggie Theus is available?
I really want Eddie Jordan.
Do you think the Wizards are offering Randy Whitman right now?
Randy Whitman, Jamal Crawford.
God, you know,
and a first round pick from Marshawn Brooks.
You know what sucks with this Lakers resurgence? Winning 5 of the last 6. Avery Johnson's job security is not better than the Lakers right now.
It's really Avery's career arc is kind of weird to think about.
It's really weird
as a coach, to look at and be like, yes, there were veterans on that 2007 Mavericks team, and everyone goes to the 2016, but I don't. I go to the 2017 because that was the best Mavericks team I've ever seen.
Yeah,
better than the championship squad. 2007 Mavericks team was an unstoppable juggernaut of epic proportions.
What did they go? They lost the first 4 and then went 67-11 for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
That's kind of absurd.
That's a little bit. That's kind of impressive. That's not bad. That's a pretty good run.
It's okay.
So, but then, he's got the playoff collapse under his belt.
Yeah.
And they're just pointing kind of in there in Dallas. And then he's got his first couple of years at the Nets. And now he's got this. And if you ask me, is Avery Johnson a good coach? I don't know.
I feel like he is, but is that, I guess, being a good coach doesn't really matter in the league from an X's and O's standpoint, from a motivation standpoint, if you can't get your main guy on board. And the whole Darren Williams thing, he just can't shoot. And it's, maybe it's system related and it got in his head and then, his head got in the way of his jumper. But
or the wrist.
Yeah, or the wrist. I mean, it there's something there. But is a new coach gonna change that? I mean, will it coincide with just a law of averages? He starts making more shots. Will it be a relief for him? Will it add more pressure to him? It's such a weird dynamic. And you try to look at if whether or not Avery Johnson did the right things with the Nets, and that's probably not an instant reaction kind of thing to figure out.
When has that happened before?
Yeah, I guess I also don't know if he's a good coach. I would assume he is. It's hard to win that many regular season games in such a short time.
The Nets are kind of perplexing, right? Because it's why I assume Darren Williams is a good point guard, but I guess I don't really know, and it's. Well, I assume Avery Johnson is a good coach, but I don't really know. Because with Darren, it's tricky because it's interesting to see how kind of the curve that you have to get over and how long that stays. Because, he had those fantastic seasons. And I'm one of the few people that I felt like, I can't remember, his last year in Utah, his last whole season in Utah, I really felt like because Chris Paul was injured, I felt like at the time, he was the best point guard in the league.
Yeah,
because Paul was injured.
Yeah, because of the Paul injury, I don't think anybody would really disagree with that. I mean, he was incredible.
Yeah, but then he went to Brooklyn. He went to Jersey, and we pretty much just swept it off, saying, "Well, he had trouble teammates, and that's all. That's all it was."
Yeah.
I mean, he's got good teammates now, and he's really struggling. And whether they're valid excuses or not, the fact that he is blaming things, it just looks so bad. It reflects poorly on him.
Do you think his news organization has let him know about the firing yet? Were they the first to break the story? I can't remember.
Breaking news, you just fired Avery Johnson.
Breaking news, you just walked out of Prokhorov's office and he's going with what you suggested.
Darren, just want to let you know, sources say.
actually, I wonder if, now I'm thinking if Carlissimo is a guy Darren's okay with, maybe this isn't such a bad interim. I mean, I don't know that there really are that many bad interim gigs or efforts, outside of someone like Kenny Natt when he was in Sacramento. Like, there really isn't a whole lot of wrong that can happen because you assume the team has already hit rock bottom if they're firing their coach, right? Relatively, yep. I mean, outside of a major injury.
Right. I mean, he's a veteran. He's a veteran coach, and by that I don't mean that he's been around a while, though he has, but he coaches veterans better.
Right.
You know, he's a better coach for veterans. He plays kind of a slower system. I mean, there's possibility there. Part of it with me, though, is that, and this kind of goes to the bigger thing with the Nets, I have this friend who continuously wonders why he doesn't have more success in life. And
you could just say me. You say my name.
No, I'm fine. You're very successful. You don't have to wear pants during the day. Okay, we win life.
That's true. And I got a really comfortable robe for Christmas too, so I'm just ignorant as all hell.
But he wants to skip steps. He doesn't want to work his way up. It's not, oh, I want to make my transition to this other field, so I'll go in at a low level and I'll work my way up through the ranks.
Right.
It's, I want to jump to the top of the line. It's, I want to, you know, manage a job right off the bat. And he's done that repeatedly, and he can never understand why it doesn't work. He's just like, well, I'm smarter than everyone else. And it's, well, yeah, but you still have to work. Like, you still have to put in the hours to prove it. And the Nets, I feel, are a lot like that, where they just want to skip steps, you know?
Yeah.
And they think that they can just kind of, you know, work their way into it. Like, oh, we're going to be a superstar team. So we're just going to go out and buy a bunch of talent. It's like, we don't really have a superstar team. You got good talent. You have a really good team. But you don't really have superstar talent, because I don't think anybody classifies anybody outside Darren, and now Darren's not playing like it. And now it's going to be, they're going to try and kind of buy their way into a championship coach. And you have to kind of build a reputation somewhere where coaches want to play first.
Right. I think that it's not even close to this level of dysfunction, and it's not to this degree, but in a relative way, it kind of reminds me of that. Of where the Trailblazers went in the early 2000s after the collapse against the Lakers, where they just started bringing in names. And Brooklyn had to do that. Like, I believe in the idea and the theory that they had to win right away. And they had to make the playoffs right away. They couldn't afford to go to Brooklyn, try to get in that foothold with a team that's missing the playoffs. And it makes for an expedited roster build that is really tricky to be successful with, but you know, they did have to do that. At the same time, this is a talented roster if Darren Williams is Darren Williams. You know, like they're not a title contending roster, even if he's at his best. But this is a really good roster. But when he's not playing like we were used to seeing him, then the glaring holes through everything really come to light, because there is no focus, and without the focus, everybody else becomes the focus, and that's not a good thing. Like, you need separation between the top player and the role players. Even someone like Joe Johnson, who I think is really, really good, you know, people get mad at his contract, but I thought he was fantastic last season. And I think he can be that kind of player with the Nets, but he needs Darren to be on another level from him, and he's not.
I'll throw a name in here. How about Jeff Van Gundy?
Jeff Van Gundy. I like that idea.
Yeah. A return to New York, play to another team. Jeff will like it because he gets paid an obscene amount of money.
That's
the nice thing about this job, is no matter what, you're going to get paid like a ridiculous amount.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I assume he and Jay-Z are close.
JVG knows hip-hop.
Yeah, he does. And that was a great Twitter meme. And I think that, I think that's a good matchup. But, you know, JVG kind of has been hard on stars in the past, I feel like. Am I remembering that correctly? Would Darren take to that?
That is part of it. I think Darren I don't think Darren minds that. I think he just wants confidence.
Yeah, that's true.
He's okay with the coach pushing him.
That's true.
But I think that there's a line, because I think Jeff will probably be easier than Stan. Stan's constantly, I think Darren would get tired of Stan constantly berating and the yelling and the voice. But
you,
I think Jeff would be more okay with.
You can't bring Avery, take Avery's voice out and bring Stan's in.
There's only so much the human ear can tolerate
before
human rights before human rights organizations start getting involved.
Let me throw this name at you, Gilbert Godfrey.
Bobcat Goldthwait. So we missed the Christmas Day game because we didn't get a chance to talk about them because we didn't do a podcast yesterday.
Yeah, I literally ran out of time.
So let's go through them real quick.
Okay.
I was really impressed with Boston. This is the first game I've really been impressed with Boston.
Yeah, I wrote about the defensive effort with them, and you know, it's just one game, and clearly they were going against a Nets team at an opportune time, but they haven't been good at stopping people.
They were going against the Death Star while it was imploding.
Right, exactly. Luke Skywalker had already fired the torpedoes or whatever the hell they were into the core reactor, and they're just like, yeah, let's throw some trash at this thing.
And then the Celtics show up and they're like, yeah, we'll blow up the Death Star.
Yeah, exactly.
What a win. But yeah, no, I liked the black off from Jeff Green. I liked what I saw.
Soldier looked great. Soldier. Yeah.
I liked what I saw from Rondo. You know, and that's what you need. Like, you're going to have to. Because here's the thing is, I just don't think you can rely on KG and Pierce to carry you.
Yeah, I liked what KG did defensively, but for the most part.
I always like what KG does defensively. Like, there's no way you can't like what KG does defensively. But, you know, you're going to have to get those other guys making moves, especially. I think Green had to compensate for Pierce.
Yeah, I mean, to Pierce's credit, his scoring game was terrible, but he did have 10 assists. You know, I mean, he played decently, but they really need him to play well most nights.
I'm going to say this nowhere in a podcast, but I'll still get crap about it on Twitter and I'll have to explain it, but I'll talk about Pierce and how he's lost it, and I'll say in the middle of it, having like a 27-point game.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying it is it's being able to count on a guy minute to minute.
Right.
Is a lot different. Like, he can still fill in the game. Like, part of it is, I love Pierce's, like, complimentary score to Rondo.
Yeah.
You know, like, finding those trailer threes, finding an open look, finding a spot up jumper, slashing through the hoop and getting, you know, some easy ones, being savvy, those kind of things. But there's just a big gap between that and, we're going to give the ball to Paul Pierce and watch him go to work.
Right.
And you can still do that, but you can't do it minute to minute.
Right.
And so, like, that's kind of the gap, I think, with run out here. But yeah, I really liked what I saw from the Celtics. It was, you know, the Nets are obviously a bad defense, but I really liked what they did offensively, and you know, you had some great points on the defense. They were really there, and I think it was a really quality win for them.
Are they going to have a hilarious non-fight every time they match up now?
You know, I like the fact that Wallace just doesn't care. I do like that fact.
And I love the way he played, because it was such a frustrated, I hate all of you guys, like, his teammates included. Like, someone has to care right now, and no one but him seemed to care.
Yeah, and that's really...
I like that leadership from him.
Yeah, I love that he's so consistent. He really is. You've seen it from every game this year. You know, no matter what's happening, really, he's doing his job. And if he gets torched defensively because he's not being a great player, he's going out there and doing kind of about the Lakers last night, because I kind of had an epiphany watching them get blasted by the Nuggets. We'll use the transition to the Lakers. So the big thing with me is, I thought it was systemic. I thought maybe it was personnel. I thought it was age. They really just don't give a damn. That's like the biggest problem that they have is, they don't give a damn. And I think D'Antoni's going to get them to execute well enough for them to win games, but I really have serious doubts about them winning a title unless they do a massive switch flip.
Yeah.
Because I wrote about this last night. It kind of it struck me. I wasn't trying to force it. It just kind of came to me. I was watching the Nuggets. The Nuggets really have a problem with their identity, right? Because they're an offensive, drive to the hoop, spread the floor, you know, punish you inside and out, don't take any mid-range jumpers that can't shoot. So, you know, and defensively, they're long and aggressive. They got these great wing defenders, but they're kind of, and they've got athletic guys and big guys in science and no real knowledgeable big man to do the work down there. And Ty Lawson's, you know, kind of, so they've kind of got this, they know what the identity that they want to be, but they're still trying to figure out how to do it. And the Lakers are much the same way, where they have all this talent, but they're kind of like the opposite, where if the Nuggets had like one star guy or two star guys to be like, okay, that's it. Like, that's the guy that we kind of build around. And Iguodala's a little bit of that defensively, but yeah, they would be a lot different. But at least they have the effort. And the Lakers are the opposite, where they have all this star talent, but they just don't have anybody giving really good effort except Kobe.
Yeah, and, you know, the last couple games, everyone, you know, the stars have played well for the Lakers relatively. You know, Gasol had a couple of you know, shaky efforts, but ultimately I thought was positive. Nash I felt was great. Kobe was, you know, he was chucking a little bit, but he was pretty good. Dwight was good defensively, and you had guys like Jody Meeks stepping up. You had Ron Artest stepping up. They didn't get any supporting help last night. And Dwight had a pretty bad game. You know, Nash was pretty good. Kobe was great from a scoring standpoint. I thought Powell had a nice game scoring the ball. But no supporting help. And they need that balance. I mean, they should be good enough to where they don't need it. But with the defensive effort they gave last night, they really need Meeks to hit threes. They need Ron to score effectively. I think he had like 10 points on 12 or 13 shots. Like they can't afford to have, you know, two role players not step up every game, regardless of who they are.
I've been watching Dwight Howard since he was a rookie. That is the worst defensive effort I have ever seen him give.
Really bad. That was really bad. Worst. Yeah.
And it is worse because having been there, you do catch a few things. You know, that's like you catch some things that don't get caught on camera.
Yeah.
He was blaming teammates on every rotation, everything. Nothing was his fault. Never once did he go, that's me. JaVale McGee literally runs by him and dunks. Like, he just stands there and watches JaVale McGee dunk. He turns to Steve Nash and says, what are you doing?
To be fair,
Nash looks at him like, I'm being 6'2".
To be fair, we all love to watch what JaVale's about to do.
I don't understand, you know? So, and it's really bad, but that was, you know, the back-to-back, and that was really, like, Kobe sloughed that one off, and it's not like Kobe's known to be forgiving in losses. He was right. He didn't have it, didn't have the energy. That ball back-to-back, the altitude, just a rough game.
Yeah.
And I asked him the scrum, I was like, do you feel like you guys still have your defense? Have you guys found your defensive identity and you lost it? Or what? And he was like, no, we've got it. He was very adamant. He was like, no, we've got it. We just have nine.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Because that didn't look like just tough nine, because he didn't give a damn. And the Nuggets actually talked a lot about how if you make him work on offense, it has a cumulative effect on his defense now. Because, like, Carl raved about how good he is offensively, because he has been.
Yeah.
But then he also kind of slipped in. I think it, you know, him having to work so hard offensively takes a little bit off of him on defense.
Right. Yeah.
But, I mean, we're working on this game. What about the Lakers, or the Knicks game? What did you think of it? Tell me what you took away from the Knicks game, because I missed it.
I loved the way that they just didn't panic down the stretch, and you saw that in the Golden State game too, and I think that that's going to be the key, is at the end of close games, Steve Nash just calms everything down, you know? And there are going to be games like last night, for sure. Like, this is not a team that is fixed, but I just, watching Steve Nash kind of keep everybody together offensively, and he sets guys up, and he just knows where to put the ball and how to let them attack at certain times, I think you're going to see a huge improvement with him at the end of games.
There were times last night when the Nuggets were in a position to basically blow the game in the smithereens.
Yeah.
They were in a position to... They're hitting threes, and the Nuggets, when they're hitting threes, are really hard to stop. And they're in a position to just absolutely bust that thing and open and make it a 20-point game. And Nash would just come down and run a set and either hit a three or find an open man. Like, he just very calmly, like you said, and efficiently just do what he does and get him right there.
And, you know, we joked about Kobe saying he doesn't want the ball. He wants to shoot and not have to create and everything. And everyone made jokes about that because that's not Kobe. But through the first, you know, three games under D'Antoni with Nash, I think that for the most part you've seen that. Outside of times during the Golden State game, for the most part, I think you've really seen that where he is comfortable letting Nash set him up.
Yeah.
And that, and if they can build if they can build any kind of chemistry, that's huge.
I don't think Dodgers saw Anthony Davis. I don't have the whole injury history unless I was a back to back. I will say, looking at him in the locker room, I winced.
Yeah.
And it was eye opening for me. And talking to some of the Lakers beat guys, they kind of said the same thing, where it's, he's still gonna be pal. He's getting better, but he's playing through a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And he's in rough physical condition. And actually, it really made me be more sympathetic to him just because I was like, Jesus. Yeah, he wasn't crying about it. He was walking around like, you know, it's like, whatever, it's life. But I was just looking at it between the way his knees looked, the way he was walking, and just his feet, and he looked beaten.
It's kind of funny for the most part how, you know, most local guys for teams who have guys on the team who have been around for a while, like the Lakers with Pau Gasol, you know, they won't be as hard on him as maybe you would expect. And I think it's because of moments like that. And it kind of makes you question, like, should I be as hard on him as I want to be? Because, and it's not like a psychological thing of, oh, I want to be his friend or anything. But like, when you see the guys in pain before and after games, it does make you think twice a little bit, you know?
It's hard for me to be like, well, he's giving crappy effort when I'm like, well, I give crappy effort when I have the sniffles. So,
right.
You know, so what's kind of the deal there? But, you know, for me, it's more of just like, you have to find a way to kind of adjust it in, where it's, you know, so now I'm less like, well, Powell's just not buying in, he's not giving effort, although there's a lot of confirmation that he's not buying in either. He's still not happy with the hire.
Right.
But, it's one where physically when he's slow to do stuff, it's hard to be like, why didn't you do that? When Dwight does it, even with the back injury, you know, at this point, you've got to be like, come on, especially like with the flagrant foul. It's, you know, that was what made me the most upset about the flagrant foul. I don't care enough to contest this.
Yeah.
That's what was crazy about that. I was trying to tell people, I was like, look at what happened. He just decides not to jump, and it's easier for him to just mush him in the face.
Right.
Like, if he can test that shot, if he works that to keep that rotation and times it, he's going to block Fareed into oblivion. But he just decided not to do it. With Gasol, you know, when he's losing guys, you can tell that he's just like, I'm old.
I have tendonitis in my knee. Like, I can't get there.
I can't do it. Sorry. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Powell, you know, he needs to play better. Like, there really isn't – it's a weird dynamic. Like, there isn't really an excuse. Like, he needs to just get it done. But at the same time, you understand if someone's throwing an excuse out for him. And I don't really know how to react to that, you know?
How they bounce back is going to be huge. Just, you know, D'Antoni was adamant about, no, look, we won five in a row, we drop one back-to-back, it's fine.
Right.
The whole team was – well, I'll say this – the whole team was kind of like, whatever, except for Steve Nash, which just makes me love Steve Nash even more. Because Nash said, yeah, we didn't have it. We didn't have the legs. Guess what? You have to find a way to win those games. You have to find a way to do things to make your team win.
Yep.
And he was like, that's our job.
When you start sliding...
And I wanted to burst through the scrum and kiss the man. It was amazing.
That would have been a story. And that's the thing, is that the good teams do find a way to respond and win those games, and not that the Lakers aren't a good team, but you know, there's still work to do, and it's good that they recognize that, at least. Or at least some of them.
Like Miami, you pretty much have to have they had to have poor effort, the shots not falling, and their execution has to be off. They have to have, like, all three things in order for them to just not be able to get back into a game.
Yeah, and LeBron has to, like, be filming a commercial for a cell phone or something. And even then.
Hi. How was your team at Heat Thunder?
It was... It's just, I love watching the two best players in the world go against each other. It's just, I mean, I loved the finals last year because it was just fun watching those guys match up as much as they did. And it's just, it's such a thing that's like taken for granted in NBA history because you don't really get that often, you know? Like I would say you got Shaq versus Duncan for a while. You would get Magic versus Bird in the 80s, you know, you apparently got quite a bit of Russell versus Chamberlain, but to have the two best players play the same or a relatively same position to where they have to guard each other quite a bit is just, it's just a fun thing to watch. And, you know, Durant had a great game scoring the ball, turned the ball over a little bit, but LeBron had a really nice scoring game, had a great overall game, and he actually committed a foul, three of them. He had three fouls, and it is possible for him to get foul calls again.
That was something on your radar. We should have blogged about that one. Like, it was one where it got on my radar, and I was like, oh, man, we should, oh, there's a stuff going on. I felt that we didn't blog about the fact that we didn't get enough attention that LeBron just hadn't fouled at all.
Yeah, I can't remember who said it. It might have been Zach Lowe who said it on Twitter, but it was like, I would be more interested in this if we had, like, video of all of the questionable calls that didn't go against LeBron during the streak.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was really great because, you know, Royce writes for us, but obviously also runs Daily Thunder. You know, not exactly a big pro LeBron or anti-KD, but he talked about during the game about how it's really amazing because he honestly doesn't foul.
Yeah.
You watch him and he just keeps position. Now, he's getting away with some stuff, and it's more that he doesn't commit any of the obvious things that superstars do, which gets them called, and he gets away with all the stuff that superstars get away with.
Yeah.
But, it is a
funny thing that I was talking to Britt Robson over the last week, and before my Kirilenko feature that I did this weekend, and
which is great, by the way.
Thank you. And he asked Kirilenko at one point, you know, a few days ago or maybe a week or two ago, like, you know, you barely have a foul a game right now. How do you, you know, how do you manage to defend without fouling? And his response was simply, I just don't foul. Like, you just don't foul the guy. And that's how you avoid fouling. And then the next game, after I heard that, he fouled out against Durant, oddly enough. And then it was either Britt or somebody else talking about how when Darko first came to the Timberwolves, he was fouling a lot, and they said, you know, what, you know, how can you not foul so much? He goes, I don't know, I guess I just don't foul them. And it's this weird thing of, like, you can, some defenders are good enough where they choose not to foul. They can defend without fouling, and even in today's game where there's no hand checking and stuff, it's, you know, LeBron probably gets the benefit of a call here and there when he's defending, but for the most part, he really doesn't foul.
I got an assistant a few years ago, and he talked about how a lot of it is simply checking your aggression. It's being able to say, I'm going to be aggressive up until this point, this level, and then I'm just simply, if I reach twice and I can't get the ball, I'm not going to reach a third time when he starts to make his move. You know, I'm going to body him when I got legal positioning, and I'm simply not going to, I'm going to resist the urge to, for my aggression to have me bump him that third time, and I'm going to let him get around.
Yeah.
And trust, the biggest thing is just trust, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, you can be a great defender who stops his man a lot of incontestant and forces a low field goal percentage and let this guy go, but you can be considered a bad defender or be on a bad defense because you don't have help behind you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, That's why the Nuggets have a low defensive efficiency.
I think that
because they have fantastic perimeter defenders in Gallinari, Iguodala, and Brewer, and they have really bad help down low. And the Grizzlies they have really great perimeter defense from Conley and Tony Allen and the other guards that they have, and they've got Marc Gasol cleaning it up down low.
I think that's a great point about trusting your defense, and obviously Thibodeau was a big part of this in Chicago, but that was really kind of what the turn of the corner was for Derrick Rose defensively. You know, he's a passable to good at times defender, or at least he was before the knee injury, because he knew how to trust his defense all of a sudden. He knew Noah was going to be there. He knew Gibson was going to be there. He knew Deng was going to help. And I think it really helped him, you know, just be a more comfortable defender, which I think for guys like him who are just insane athletes and so strong, you wonder, how are you not a better defender? It could be uneasiness.
You remember a week and a half ago when I said that the Houston Rockets were going to go on a run at some point?
They are they're a team that scores, and they blew out the Bulls. I mean, that wasn't even close.
Yeah, they housed them. They pants that team.
And even you know, we'll get back to it. But last night I was in attendance, actually not as a media member, but as a customer for Rockets Timberwolves, and end of the game, Timberwolves could not defend the pick and roll with Harden, and he just destroyed them in the fourth quarter. And he didn't need that against the Bulls, but that is just such a weapon to have.
Glenn's starting to figure it out, too.
Yeah.
Like, they're starting to figure out how to coexist, and they're getting all the different pieces on the same page. I haven't checked on Chandler Parsons' condition. I know he has some knee soreness. But... you know, Sheik had 20-18 in that game,
yeah,
versus Bulls.
Yeah.
And when Lynn Harden are forcing the issue, and they're forcing the teams to adjust, and then the teams adjust, and then those guys are finding a Sheik, and they're finding Parsons, and they're finding Carlos Delfino, you know, that's just a really, it's just a really potent weapon. And defensively, you know, it's going to be a long haul, but I feel like the team can pull into, they can be a top five offense, 15th ranked defense by the end of the year.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. I still wonder. I still don't know that I trust their supporting cast.
I don't either. Their supporting cast is like primarily rookies that get sent to the D-League.
Yeah, and I just think that there's got to be a point where this breaks for them in the season, and maybe that's when they'll miss the playoffs. But if Lynn and Harden play well together for extended, you know, stretches a couple weeks at a time, and Sheik can stay out of foul trouble and rebound the ball. You know, Chandler Parsons has been good enough. Maybe that's all they need. Maybe they just need those four guys and then a random role player to step up here and there.
Well, like, I mean, you know, I love donating to Martin Lydia Kiff. I love Terrence Jones. Both those guys are in the D-League. Greg Smith, legit.
He is. I talked about that with Jason Friedman on the podcast of, like, this guy came out of nowhere, and he is just, like, he is an actual good player.
Yeah. I mean, he's just, he does the work, he does all the things that you want him to do, and he does them efficiently. You know, he's going to be one of those guys that really drives a playoff team nuts, I think.
Yeah, and he's just, like, he's so physical, but he's not physically imposing. It's weird. Like, he just finds a way to kind of root himself in against guys.
And here's the thing, like, to me, the Rockets have the model for an upset. I don't think they have the model to be legitimate and go deep. I just think they have the model for an upset.
Yeah.
It's like, if it's Spurs-Rockets first round, that's going to be really annoying for San Antonio.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's really the kind of team that they don't want to face, is a team that can just kind of run with them and chuck up shots at the same rate.
Yeah, fast score.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they were good. The Clippers are great. We talked about them. They're awesome.
Are the Clippers the best team in basketball right now?
Yeah. The Clippers are the best team in basketball.
I got to do the 4-point play today and looked at their transition offense, which that is just a fun sequence of going through highlights, is looking at all their transition possessions, because that is a fun team on the break. They just kill you in so many ways in transition. It's weird. Like, one team. Some teams can just go one way at you in transition, and this team just they can leak out, they can fill the lane, they can do secondary transition where the trailer comes and hurts you. Like, it's just, there's so much they can do.
That's the big thing is last year, if you stop Lob City, you're okay. They were going to reset the offense.
Right.
But now they go into the secondary transition, and you're just getting punished.
Yeah, and everyone flies at you. Matt Barnes and DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin have been so good at outlet passes.
Yeah,
which is a huge, I mean, obviously that's how you start the break, but it's been a huge, huge boost for them.
People aren't really understanding how good Blake Griffin's been this year.
Yeah.
Because he's made a little adjustments.
Yep.
And he hasn't made them to be like an elite player, but he's made them enough to be for, you know, you to say, wow, he's getting it.
Yeah, and that's what you need him to do before he becomes an elite player, is recognize those adjustments and then figure out how to turn them into his particular skill sets.
We had any good, let's talk, I don't think either of us care about the early game. What do you think Clippers lost them?
I think the Clippers are going to run them. And it's not that I don't believe in Boston. I still think they're going to be good, and I like what we saw defensively from them, but the Clippers at home, just the way they run, Boston is literally the worst transition defense in the league right now. And for a team and they're also historically the lowest offensive rebounding percentage as a team in NBA history. And that's a bad combination. It's one thing if you're going for offensive boards and getting beat in transition like that, because there is a risk-reward thing there. It's just risk-risk. Like, that's all there is with their transition defense right now, because they don't try to rebound the ball on offense, and then they just don't get back on defense. That's a bad combo.
I don't have a whole lot of faith, just because, you know, it's one where, Jared Solinger's tough points aren't really going to work against probably DeAndre Jordan and their army of guys down low. And then, you know, Jason Terry hasn't really hit a big shot since 2011. And, you know, KG should be fun, though. Well, I'll tell you one thing. This is a team that doesn't like getting... The Clippers are the single most irritating team in the league.
Yeah.
And the Celtics are the second most irritating team in the league.
And yeah. we might have another shorts hiking incident in this one.
I mean, you know.
I would almost guarantee.
I'll tell you this. If Clippers and Grizzlies face in the first round, everybody getting ejected.
Yeah. I guarantee Matt Barnes and Paul Pierce get into it tonight. I would put money on that.
Yeah, Barnes and Pierce, you got Blake and DeAndre. That's the thing. Like, KD's not going to stand for them doing the big dunk and the scream and the glare and the whole thing.
Right, that's his thing.
Exactly. So, like, KG, you know, if they try that with KG, he is going to slap them and run the other way, pretend to be held back. That's what will happen. He's going to show them.
How dare you? I will not tolerate this slander.
And that's the name of the podcast. How dare you?
All right, Matt, thank you. And have a safe drive back if you're not already sitting in your own driveway.
I appreciate it, and we'll be probably back tomorrow, and check out stuff on CBSSports.com on basketball. We got some good stuff coming up over the next couple weeks, and the season kind of officially started.
Yeah, now the games count.
Now the games count.
All right, thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.